Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Dave Kubikin.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. And we have a special guest today. And Dave, would you like to introduce our guest?
Sure. Today is June 19th, if my calendar is correct here, which means that the longest day of the year is coming up. And we thought, what better way to acknowledge what that actually means in our world than to have Stephanie Bastian from the Alzheimer's Association join us. Stephanie is the Director of Development for the Northeastern New York chapter. And Stephanie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So, Debbie and I spoke yesterday, and we said, you know what, why don't we email Stephanie, see if she can get on, because in 2 days from now, it's a pretty big deal for you guys, right? It's the longest day.
Yeah, so it's actually tomorrow, which I know confuses people because the day does change. The summer solstice changes sometimes every year. So it'll be taking place tomorrow, Sunday, June 20th.
Thank goodness you corrected me because I had all these balloons set up for Monday. So good.
Hey, you can celebrate right into Monday. That's totally fine with me.
So why is that a big deal in your world?
Yeah, so this unique event, it's held annually on the day with the most light, the summer solstice, as I said, and it's a day to honor the estimated 6 million Americans living with Alzheimer's and the 11 million people that care for them, because each and every day is like the longest day for those individuals.
Wow, that's very clever. I like that. There's been some news about Alzheimer's, and I know that you're not going to get into the science of anything, but, there's still no cure for this disease. It's still something that everyone needs to, unfortunately, live with, and it's one of those things that kind of gets worse as it progresses. What does your organization do to, the longest day is a great way to bring attention to the disease. What do you guys try to do as an organization to try to help families that are dealing with this?
Yeah, so as you said, the longest day is one of the many events that the Alzheimer's Association hosts throughout the year. And we host those events in order to provide local care and support services to the community. Our chapter, the Northeastern New York chapter, oversees 17 counties, but we have chapters all throughout the country. So regardless of where you're listening to this, if it's not in the 17 counties that we cover, we still offer these same services. And so to tell you a little bit about what those are, we have care consultations that we offer families, and these are free to people with Alzheimer's disease and their families to assist with many different things, talking about care planning, problem solving, and behavior management strategies. We also offer education programs to just equip people with the skills and knowledge to understand Alzheimer's and dementia and enhance the quality of life for people with the disease. And we also offer support groups. And, over the past almost year and a half at this point, our education programs and our support groups have gone virtual and by phone. But we're slowly starting to, move back to some in-person activity. And so some of those will be offered in person moving forward. But definitely we will still have some virtual options and phone options available as well. And all of these services can be accessed by calling our 24-hour toll-free helpline. And that number is 1-800-272-3900. And also, as you mentioned, while we do provide a lot of those local care and support services, we also raise funds for critical research, which is very important.
Actually, on your website right now, which I should let everyone know, is www.alz.org/NortheasternNY. And I didn't even know this. It's Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month this month. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah. So the longest day obviously falls in the month of June, which, as you just said, is Alzheimer's Brain Awareness Month. So we've had many different things happening all throughout the month to support that initiative.
The other thing I found on your site about the longest day was something called the 29 Peak Challenge, and you have my intrigue here. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so this is a really, really cool new event for us. One of our board members, John Marcantonio, came up with this idea a few years ago. He's actually been hiking, and he's a 46er, so he's a very experienced hiker. But he put together this challenge where he was looking for groups of people to be on 29 peaks in the Adirondacks and paint the peaks purple, as we're calling it. And we right now, throughout the weekend of the longest day, have had over 60 individuals hiking in the Adirondacks. And so it's become a very successful event for us. And people right now, I'm sure, are hiking as we speak.
That's very cool. I know that our firm is, you know, pretty involved with what your organization does, and you guys have been nice enough to have us speak to some of the families who are dealing with this when it comes to financial or legal matters. I also know that you have a bunch of walks because we're happy to be sponsors to these walks that are going to take place in the fall. Do you mind telling everyone a little bit about those?
Sure, absolutely. So as I said, many events at the Alzheimer's Association. And so as we move into the fall, the Northeastern New York chapter has 5 walks that we will be hosting. And we are moving forward with in-person walks this year. And these walks do take place all across the country. You can find information about where those walks are at alz.org/walk. And in our area, as you said, we are fortunate enough to have Herzog be a presenting sponsor for 2 of our walks, which we are so grateful for. And we'll be kicking off our first walk in the Albany area on September 25th. And this is just an event that people can come to and be around other people that are going through the same thing that they are. Many people have called this just a really large support group. We see families who have met at the event, and year after year they come back to see each other again and to support one another in the difficult journey that they're going through.
I think the work that you guys do is tremendous. I know that Debbie, myself, Jay Marie, Harry, we all kind of feel the same way that it's a reality that things like this happen, diseases like this happen, and it seems like if you live long enough, it happens more and more. But to be able to have avenues to get help, I have family members who kind of had the quiet battle with it where they didn't want to tell anyone that they're spouse had dementia, and they're at home caring for this person. And a lot of times it's a wife caring for a husband who's much larger. It's really, really difficult. And hopefully people who are listening, if you have a loved one or family member, friend, coworker that's been dealing with this, make sure they know that there are resources out there like the Alzheimer's Association. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think the Northeastern New York chapter is one of the best and most active in the country. Thanks so much for joining us, Stephanie. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you again for having us. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephanie.
So, okay. Debbie, a lot to unpack there.
I know. I'm still visualizing like purple paint on the top of the peaks. When she was saying they're painting the peaks purple, is like one of those visualizations where I could see like these little kind of cartoon characters with all these little purple peaks. But I think that's awesome. And a lot of people don't realize. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I said, hopefully they have some drones out there so they can get some cool photos of a bunch of purple on these mountains.
And I think it's great that they do this. And a lot of people don't realize that these services are available. People don't even think about it, right? It's a silent battle that people go through, like you said, and they don't want to tell anybody what they're going through. And there's so many people that are going through the same thing. And if they reach out to the Alzheimer's Association, the support groups are absolutely awesome.
Yeah. You know, we've done a couple of those, small presentations, small groups, 10 to 15 people, and it's just one of a series of counseling sessions, I guess you can call them, that they have set up. And, you know, some of them are for the person who's been diagnosed with dementia. Some of them are for the caregiver or a family member who's got a loved one who's been diagnosed, because there's a lot going on here. It's not just someone has a disease and that person is afflicted with it. It's a family-wide thing, a household-wide thing. And even though a diagnosis, in my mind, doesn't mean much of anything other than that there's a certain direction things may go in a future. It's not like it's a light switch and all of a sudden someone has dementia and they've lost their capacity. It is a slow-moving thing at times, and if you've been diagnosed, if you've had a diagnosis in the family, it's not too late to do estate planning and financial planning. That's why they have these courses available for people. And, you know, we say it all the time, Debbie, if you could just prepare a little earlier, then there's one less thing to do when the inevitable bad news happens. You know, we can't control a diagnosis, but the idea is to just be prepared just in case.
Definitely. Sooner's better than later, right?
Absolutely.
Why don't we get some callers in here? If you guys would like to be the first caller today, it would be 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Dave and I would like to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, legal matters that you'd like to give us a call for. And it's interesting, we have on Monday, June 21st, we're doing our webinar week this week, and the webinar on Monday is actually legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease, and it's presented in partnership with the Alzheimer's Association of Northeastern New York. So that's a great webinar to kind of plug into and get some information. And, you know, maybe you have someone in your family that's been diagnosed and they're kind of not knowing what's out there that's available to them. This would be a great webinar to kind of plug into, get some information, and then maybe reach out to the Alzheimer's Association if that's something that you need some help with, because a lot of people don't know that those benefits are out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times when Kim's on the radio or when you're presenting with Kim on something like aging in place or community Medicaid updates, so much of those slides and so much of a part of those presentations are getting home care, particularly where people have dementia or different cognitive inabilities. So the kind of care that people need isn't, you know, hands-on, heavy lifting type. It's more of supervision and helping people through their days at home. And you know, I feel like community Medicaid and Alzheimer's is kind of linked together, Debbie, because I feel like if someone does have dementia, the earliest kind of intervention that the family is going to have is going to be some sort of home care, because the kinds of needs that they have mean that they still could stay at home as long as, you know, we know that they're not going to take their medication four times a day and they're going to remember they took their medication as a kind of extreme example.
It's very difficult. And I met with some people this week and they have their mom. You know, their mom has been diagnosed, and she does still live alone. And they said that she doesn't want to go into a nursing home. Like, that is like the end-all, be-all. It's like, I do not want to go into a nursing home. So sometimes she lies to them. You know, did you take your pills? Yes. Did you eat your dinner? Yes. And it's sitting there. You know what I mean? And they're like, okay, you know, we need to work through this. And they're not lying on purpose. It's just they're so afraid that they can't get someone in the house to help them, remind them, and take care of things, that they want to stay home, that they kind of brush over the truth a little bit.
I feel like you're talking about my children as you mentioned this, because did you brush your teeth? Yeah, I brushed my teeth. Did you? absolutely. I mean, I've had family members that have had this. Debbie, I don't know if you've had any family members or friends that have had dementia. It is not a light switch, right? It's just because you're diagnosed with something doesn't mean that your worth is any less than it was the moment before you were diagnosed. You're still quite smart. You know what the right answers are, whether or not you've done it, or you don't remember if you did it. You know the right answer is, yes, I did take my pills and get off my back type of thing. So you're absolutely right. And it becomes a difficult situation for families because, we always talk all the time about powers of attorney, and actually it might be a pretty good segue into talking about the new power of attorney. But, you know, with powers of attorney, we always talk about how at some point, and we don't know when that point's going to be, you as an agent, when we're talking to the kids, we say, look, at some point, mom is no longer making the decisions for mom. I don't know when that point is going to be, but she puts you in place when she could make her decisions for that one day down the road where she might not be able to make her own decisions. And it becomes really difficult for families, Debbie, to figure out at what point do they kind of take over the steering wheel when they have a loved one with dementia, because it's not a light switch, as I said.
No, another thought too, and this has come up a lot, is people did their estate planning. We've got a lot of people that do plan ahead. And whenever they do their estate planning, they name each other first, right? Husband and wife name each other first, and then they name the kids. Well, now, even if they don't have a cognitive impairment, mom and dad are aging, right? And is it best for them to still be power of attorney for each other? And I've had a lot of people that have come in, and even though they're perfectly fine, they've moved the kids up on the power of attorney so that now, if there is a situation in the future, we don't have to do a resignation or get a doctor's note or whatever that says that that parent, you know, that spouse can't act to be able to move the kids up.
So what you do is you make the primary agent be spouse or kids, that kind of thing,
yeah.
So that the
mm-hmm.
kids are a higher level. Smart.
Debbie,
smart.
Dave, we have our first caller of the morning. We have Elizabeth in Glenville.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning. I have a question. I have a Medicare trust fund with you already, and I want us to set up a college trust fund for two of my grandchildren, both in the same family, one's 13, one's 5, and I want to know the best way to do that. The only thing in my trust is my house, basically. I think I really have to do a new will. I was thinking of two of my children have said they don't really need any money from me at all. So I could take what they would inherit and do things like percentage with the house. What's the best way? And how do I avoid taxes for that trust fund?
That's a really good question, Elizabeth, and a couple different options here. So do you mind just saying the ages of your grandkids again?
Yeah, one is 13, one is 5, both in the same family.
Gotcha. So, you know, and I hope you're here to see their college graduations and their, well, I hope.
I'm 90 already, so I doubt it.
Well, you sound fantastic, so hopefully you will. Now, the reason why some of these ages matter is because if the goal is to help with college, and for the 13-year-old, college is only 4 years away.
Yeah, right.
Right, you may want to do some giving during your life, or if the thought process is, well, hey, you know, I do need money myself, but when I pass, I want money to go to help pay for their maybe existing student loans, if in the case of the 13-year-old, or future college expenses in the case of the 5-year-old. You know, what I've done as a parent is I set up a 529 account for my kids, and that's a great way for, yeah, 529 account. So that's an account, it's an investment account that's designated for some sort of recipient, a beneficiary, your grandkids. Each one should have their own. And that fund grows. Money is invested and it grows, right, hopefully. And they can use those monies for certain kinds of educational expenses. It's not your money. It's their money for the future use. It could be for things like private school before college, and it could be for college. And so you talk to a financial advisor about potentially setting that up. Now, there's drawbacks to it because I don't know what your future holds, and giving money to a 529 account is a gift. It's a transfer from you to a separate account. But that's one way to deal with things, right? Especially if you think that the 13-year-old is going to be going to college during your lifetime you want to see the benefit that your money is doing. Another thing, likely easier, but maybe doesn't fit what you're trying to do, and is simply amend your trust, your current trust, as to who your beneficiaries are, to say that money will be held in trust for these kids for college, or that money will first be used for existing college loans they may have. I don't know what path they're going to take. We have clients who have kids who go to 8 years of school and then some more, right? They do undergrad and then med school and then this school and that school. We have clients whose kids are extremely successful and they didn't go to college or they only went to 2 years. So we got to be careful with the language we use, because if we just say it's for college expenses and then they don't actually go to college or not as long as you think they were gonna, we still want that money to be available. But it's just words, and we could put it on a piece of paper for you and either amend your trust. You may want to put money in a 529 account. Certainly setting up a separate trust, that may be something you want to do as well. I don't know if it's necessarily needed, if your goal is just to leave more money to them and your kids are saying they don't need money themselves. So you have a lot of options here. I think your best option is to come in to meet with Debbie or Harry, Jamie, or myself.
Well, I can kind of
go through it, because there's a lot more.
Yeah.
Perfect. We'll have you come see Harry. There's a lot more questions I have, and some of them aren't really appropriate
I understand now what you're saying. Okay. I don't have enough money assets to open anything now to put money in, basically.
So more of an inheritance.
Yeah, be more inherent. But I see what you're saying about not just saying college, because it'll take different avenues. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, you've helped me a great deal. So the main thing is to come in and get this, ironed out.
Yeah, get a full checkup. Come on in.
Yeah. So you have to go through a financial. I've never gone through a financial advisor before. I don't really need to. Do I?
Not necessarily. I know that a lot of the products that they'll offer will include investments within a 529 account, but you probably can go to your bank and set one up as well.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank
you. You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, have a good, you too. Happy 19th. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, those were really a lot of great questions. And when people call and they ask questions like that, if you've got amendments that you need to make, or you're making second thoughts about your documents, or if you haven't looked at your documents in 5 years, you should really give us a call, come in, dust up the documents, and get a checkup, don't you think, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely, because the checkup, first of all, they're free, and you might as well see if there's something that needs to be changed. Oftentimes not. Maybe little things need to be changed, and when there's a lot of little things, it becomes time to change. My daughter's last name is not my last name anymore. It's now someone else's last name. They've moved 3 times, so on and so forth. It is a good idea to update documents there. But your needs and the needs of your kids change. I'm sure that Elizabeth, when she created her trust, her idea was, let me protect money for my children. And now she's got children that are saying, we don't need the protection, Mom, take care of the grandkids. So people's wishes change. And so it sounds like it is for Elizabeth. And it sounds like she's also pretty long overdue to come in and kick the tires on that review. I did want to mention, Debbie, this new form of power of attorney, which is just getting out there now. So a little history lesson on powers of attorney. It used to be 2 pages long. That was a lovely time when it came to explaining legal documents, because we only had 2 pages to explain. But the problem was that there weren't a lot of guidance to the agents or the principal saying, what are you doing here? What powers are you giving? Hey, agent, what powers are you getting? What is your job? And about 12 years ago, New York State, overcorrected, because they made it an 8-page power of attorney and about 14 pages when it involves something called a gifting rider. I can't say that having too much information in the power of attorney is a bad thing, Debbie. It's just annoying when we have to explain it all, and a lot of things don't normally apply. But what New York is going to do now is they're going to actually tighten it up a little bit, get it a little shorter. It still may end up being quite long, depending on who you use to prepare your power of attorney. I know we're going to be adding lots of language in a modification section to that basic form, just to make sure that our clients and their agents, and those agents you were talking about, Debbie, are able to do the heavy lifting and do Medicaid-specific actions. But, in my mind, as we reach out to our clients and say, hey, there's a new power of attorney out there, I don't think the word have or or need is a word that we should be using. I don't think that anyone will need the new power of attorney, but it may be a really good idea to do so, because while you're doing the new power of attorney, you could update those last names, those addresses, and maybe there is a change of order. Maybe, you know, mom and dad are a little bit older and they are going to elevate those kids, as he mentioned. So this new power of attorney, if it's been a while since you've been in, you may want to come in, if nothing else, to learn about that power of attorney, and maybe we could tweak things here or there.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity just to come in and kick the tires, because there have been changes. I've had people that have come in that haven't looked at their documents in 20 years, and other than the fact that maybe somebody moved, there really haven't been any changes. I had clients come in the other day that haven't been in 16 years, and they have the old disclaimer bypass will, which is where the assets go to the spouse and then the spouse decides if they want them or not, and then they can go into a trust. And he was asking, you know, is this outdated? Is this, what do I need to do? And it's interesting, because with the possible changes with the tax laws for estate tax, it might still be a valuable asset to have this disclaimer will. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, like, your family may not have changed, maybe everyone's a little older, but the tax law has changed, right? Your asset level likely has changed, and there's threats that the tax laws may change yet again. So it's this year in particular, it's pretty interesting to talk about. We've had lots of clients recently who say, what happens to capital gains? I hear capital gains tax is going to go through the roof, or I heard that estate, the death tax, they call it, the estate tax, right? It maybe the thresholds are going to go down. Scary headline. Does that matter for you? Well, it depends on how much money you have. That language that family had with the disclaimer trust that you mentioned, that was in a world where you had to have a lot less to have a taxable estate. Now, in general, you need to have a lot more money. So it is really, you know, I would have to imagine that if you have a financial advisor, you're seeing that person once a year, once every 2 years. We're a form of advisor. We deal with finance. We deal with tax. We deal with all sorts of things. And it is, it's important to come in every now and then. The power of attorney gives you yet another reason to do so. And hopefully we will have you come in. I was going to mention, Debbie, you could be our second caller by calling 518-476-5900. And if you don't want a call but you do want a consultation, you can call our offices at 518-465-7581, or you could email us at info@herzoglaw.com. You could also go to our website at herzoglaw.com to check out our webinar schedule. You did mention that we have webinars coming up. We're kind of against the break, so I don't know if we have time to bring them up right now. But we are a busy, busy team here these days, Debbie.
We are. We have a lot of stuff going on. And do you want to go to the break now?
You know, seeing as you said that, we are going to go to our break right now. It is 8:30. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikin.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next half hour to answer questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And you could be the first caller this half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900.
1-800-476-5900. We talked a lot about planning for Alzheimer's and pre-planning for powers of attorney and stuff. And it's interesting, the thing that a lot of people don't think about is they don't think about what happens when someone passes away. And a lot of times people are not prepared. And it seems very odd, but it's the last week I've had several people that did not do planning. The person passed away. There was no will in place. There was no documentation. They have no idea where assets are. It's very difficult whenever a person passes and there's no documents. The one of the people that came in this week, her husband passed away. He passed away actually over a year ago, and she really hasn't done anything. And when he passed away, he'd been divorced for a long time. So he has an ex-wife and a child from a first marriage who also has grandchildren. He has the person he was married to now. They had a child, and that child had already passed away, leaving grandchildren. And he didn't leave a will. He had a lot of uniform gift to minors accounts that were set up for these grandkids that needs to be changed. He had some individual accounts in his name, and I was talking to his wife, and I said, okay, we have to prepare a family tree in order to file the documents with the court to get you appointed administrator because there's no will. And I said, what was his ex-wife's name? And she says, I don't have a relationship with them. And I'm like, I know that, but I've got to have her name. And I need to know the date that they were divorced. And I need the son's name from the first marriage. And I need his address. And she was just like, I have no relationship with that family. I don't know any of that information. And I said, but unfortunately, we've got to have that information to do the family tree. It's just very sad that, you know, you've got to drag all this information out to be able to file paperwork with the court, but that's what the court requires.
I get frustrated, Debbie, sometimes, and hearing you say this, like, my frustration level is growing because it is such a pain in the you-know-what to go through an estate administration when someone passes, and that's when you have all the info. That's when you have the family tree all set. That's when everyone gets along, right? And it's still a pain. The process is just a little antiquated. It involves, you know, obviously legal counsel, paralegals. It involves filing fees to the courts, letting the court know who has an ability to contest a will, and literally telling the people who have the ability to contest a will that they have the ability to contest a will. So if you're like, hey, what's the worst way to do this process? It probably starts with, you know, telling the people who have had nothing to do with the decedent's life recently, hey, guess what? You know what? You don't get along well. Guess what you could do to really, you know, mess with the other side here? You could try to contest this will or delay the inevitable, the probating of the will. And that process, you know, it's good to have a will because that says where assets are going to go. But the part with the family tree, Debbie, that's going to be unavoidable, whether it's an estate administration or a will, because that's one of the things that the surrogate's court is going to require. They want a family tree. They want to know the lay of the land and who can fight and who can't and who has standing and who doesn't. And I go one step further, Debbie. I say not only do you need to think about planning, you need to also think about maybe doing a trust or avoiding probate with beneficiary designations, retitling your house a certain way. There's a lot of ways to do it, but you know that fact pattern that you just mentioned sounds like the gentleman who passed away didn't have a very good relationship with a child from a previous marriage. It sounds like he likely had no intention of leaving that person money. But because he didn't have documents, right, now that person who was not a part of his life for whatever reason, right, we're not going to dissect that, but now we got to jump through hoops to try to get a signature on something called a waiver and consent just to allow second spouse to administer whatever needs to be administered. And like everyone out there, it could all be avoided. How? Well, it depends on your fact pattern. Sometimes it's trust, sometimes it's beneficiary designations. But Debbie, I don't know how else for us to, like, I wish that our audience can come to work with us one day and just see what goes into an estate administration. We've done these webinars. I know you've done them, right? What to do when a loved one dies.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's fun. None of it's easy. And even when the fact pattern is pretty straightforward, like that fact pattern you just gave, Debbie, is not straightforward in any way, and it's super complicated. And unfortunately, the steps you're taking there are the same steps when it's not complicated at all, when it's a basic family tree. So, sorry, my frustration is now coming down. I'm going to calm myself down. Sorry about that, Debbie.
That's okay. Well, and to complicate matters more, what people don't understand is just because you're the spouse doesn't mean you're going to get everything. When I said to her, okay, without a will, you as the spouse gets the first $50,000 and then half of everything else, she literally burst into tears. She literally burst into tears. And I was like, oh, here's a box of Kleenex. You know, I don't do well with people that cry. And I said, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And she's like, but this is my grandchildren's money. I mean, and the grandchildren from his first marriage and his second marriage were the benefit, you know, these accounts were set up for, and this other money. She's like, what's going to happen to this money? Are the grandkids going to get their money? What about this other money? You know, how am I going to live without getting this money? And people think that just because you're married, you're going to get it all, but it's not, that's not the way it goes.
Yeah. It's that's unfortunate. And you know, the child from the previous relationship is going to be entitled to money. Based on New York law. So, I mean, you know, step one, in my mind, we're estate planning attorneys, and that's who gets your money when you have an estate. You have an estate when you're not here anymore. So who gets your money when you pass away? That's estate planning. And everyone does it all the time, but they, for some reason, get a little antsy when it comes to dealing with attorneys and dealing with wills and trusts. But you all do estate planning every day because you all have bank accounts, you all have life insurance and retirement accounts. Everyone out there listening right now, you have some account that has a beneficiary on it. I guarantee it. And that beneficiary in that account will get that money. That's how it works. That's a form of estate planning because they get it upon your passing. Step one, is that a person we still like? Is that a person where we want them to get the money? Are they like Elizabeth's grandkids and 5 and 13, and now what are we going to do? Right? Do we need rules on those dollars? You guys all do estate planning all the time because you have assets where things pass when someone dies. You just got to go that one further step of meeting with Debbie. By the way, excuse me, I did not get to be on the radio with you yet, Debbie. Ben, I'm sure you know this. Debbie Verney, Esquire, is the, I think, was it the world's best attorney? Or was it best attorney in Saratoga?
I think it was in the universe. I'm pretty sure.
In the universe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was just Saratoga.
So congratulations, Debbie. I said it to you before. I didn't get to say it on the radio. So you were recognized and voted as the best attorney in Saratoga.
Woohoo!
Yeah,
woo-hoo.
I know. That's exciting, huh?
Very. So meet with Debbie. She's a good attorney, right? She can come up with an estate plan for you that just piggybacks off of your life insurance that you already have or piggybacks off of that retirement that you already have. Just come up with a plan that makes sense because, you know, Harry says this all the time. No one's getting out of here alive, right? So have this plan that makes sense and try to avoid they're like unforced errors, you know, in tennis. You hit the net. Not having some basic documents is like hitting the net. And you know, every plan could be different, by the way. I'm not saying everyone's got to do a trust. You just got to have a plan or kick the tires or make a conscious decision not to do a will because you kick the tires on it and you met with someone like Debbie. So congrats again,
Debbie.
Thank
you, Dave. Thank you. just to mention, this week it's webinar week. And I know with the weather being nicer and the changes in mask laws and everything, I know a lot of people are out and about. But if you're around this week and you have some time, you could, Monday, June 21st at 2 o'clock, we're doing the presentation with the Alzheimer's Association for Legal and Financial Planning. On Tuesday, 2 in the afternoon, is the top 10 reasons to plan your estate. That's kind of a fun one.
Wednesday, June 23rd, is wills versus trusts. If you have questions as to whether you need a trust or you just need a will or you don't need anything at all, you definitely should do that. And then Thursday, June 24th, is aging in place. That's an excellent one to go to find out if, you know, you can stay home. What's available? That's a great one to know more information about community Medicaid and other things that are out there that you can use. And Friday is Medicaid and estate planning myths, which is also a fun one. I always call that one Mythbusters. I used to love that show on TV.
I'm gonna confess, I love that show too. It was fantastic. So could that car actually do that like it does in the movie? No, the answer is no. It's always no. It can never do it. If you missed the first half hour, we did have Stephanie Bastian, who is the Director of Development for the Alzheimer's Association's Northeastern New York chapter, and she joined us because tomorrow, not Monday, tomorrow is the longest day. It's the day with the most light, number one, right, the summer solstice, but more importantly, it's recognizing that for people who are caregiving for those with dementia or those who do have dementia, every day is the longest day. They are celebrating it in a very cool way, Debbie, right? There's a 29 hike or 29 peak hike that you could do. You could pick a peak, wear purple, and the idea is to paint the mountains purple. Super cool. You can go to their website, www.alz.org/NortheasternNYNY, that is, not New York, NY. If you have a loved one who might need some assistance, may want to get some support emotionally in terms of actual programs that might be available in your community, it's a wonderful website, wonderful organization. You could also call them at 1-800-272-3900, and a very big thank you to them. We've worked very closely with them over the years, and we hope to continue to do that. It's such a good cause, and I don't know if you heard, Debbie, there was some, you know, breaking news about some medication that's now going to be available that was FDA approved that might help at least slow down dementia, which is great news.
That is great news. My grandmother had Alzheimer's, and she lived by herself, and she was perfectly fine. And then one day, and, you know, the family kind of laughs about it now, but one day she had like a little step porch, right, with a couple steps, and as she was going out the door, she kind of just fell off the steps and got disoriented and decided that she owned all the houses in the neighborhood and went door to door to collect rent. So the police called my mother for the neighbors.
Was your grandmother a real estate tycoon and you guys just didn't realize it?
I don't know. She, you know, so one of the neighbors called the police, so my mother had to go down to the police station and pick her up. And, you know, that was kind of the beginning of when we were like, you know, what are we going to do? And there weren't any, this is a long time ago, so there weren't any things back then like community Medicaid or anything where she could stay home. And the problem was, you know, whenever that happened and you couldn't take care of yourself anymore, there really wasn't a choice, right? Everybody worked. There was no one to take care of her. And as things progressed, my grandmother ended up in a nursing home because if community Medicaid had been around back then, I mean, that would have been a slam dunk, right? Because she could still kind of take care of herself. She just needed someone to kind of watch over her.
And, you know, the program, and I think you said Thursday is going to be the Aging in Place webinar. By the way, if you can't reach or you can't make any of those times, 2 o'clock is sometimes tough. These webinars, just about all of them, are available on our website, herzoglaw.com. You can just click and view when you feel like it and pause it and look at it again and what have you. The Aging in Place one, though, Debbie, or the How Not to Play for Services or the Community Medicaid Updates, all those three really emphasize how good the community Medicaid program is, particularly for people like your grandmother who had those just general supervision needs, because you can get a lot of hours of coverage through the program, and the hours themselves, it's a little easier, I think, to find caregivers because they're not doing some of the messier parts of being a caregiver, perhaps, right? They're just going to hang out with grandma and make sure she's all right, and make sure she doesn't go collect rent from all the neighbors, and make sure that she doesn't leave the stove on or she doesn't take her medicine four times. And so as a result, in a way, I feel like the community Medicaid program is built for and best run when there's some sort of cognitive impairment that the person who needs care has, because you end up getting more hours, and the hours are sometimes easier to fill. It's more likely it could be a family member or a neighbor who could provide it, because, you know, a neighbor may not want to give, your grandma a bath, but they may be okay sitting in the yard with her for a little while just to keep her company. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that, like I said, it would have been a godsend back then. I know that my uncle took the distributor cap off of her car so she couldn't drive. You know, nowadays, you'd just call the auto service and have them come fix it, but she couldn't figure out why her car wouldn't start. So there were little things that we did to protect her, but community Medicaid would have been a godsend back then, to have somebody that we could have come in and just take care of minor things and help her.
You know, that reminds me that I had a client in Kingston. Let's just say his car has lots of marks on it because he was not a very good driver, and he thought he could still drive, and he did have dementia. So his girls, two adult girls, would take away his car keys. And I'm telling you, he's smart, because he would call the car dealership and order another set of keys. And he did that a couple times. And so they said, you know what, we're going to now take away the car. We're going to start to institute our power of attorney and not let him get away with this anymore. But the driving thing, that it was a big, big fight for them and a big realization for them that you know, they were always the agents on the power of attorney, but they had never once used it. Dad's fine. Yeah, he's diagnosed with this, but he knows us. He's fine. He's just same old dad. But, you know, we can't have him on the road if he's, you know, going to imperil other people. And that's when they kind of had to grow up a little bit and start to enforce the power of attorney that they were given. And I remember I had the conversation with them that I have with a lot of clients, which is at some point, you know, your parent becomes your child. Right, we don't like to really mm-hmm. think about it or talk about it, but at some point that's going to happen. And so you want to get, you know, I have a 7-year-old daughter. I want to give her a lot of powers, but only things that I approve of. Right? What do you want for breakfast? But I know it's not going to be chocolate cake. Right? So you kind of manage the situation, and you become a parent to your parent.
It's true.
Eventually.
It's true.
And that's not something that anyone looks forward to, but there are a lot of services out there, and there's a lot of things that you can qualify for that people aren't aware of. And that's another one of the webinars that's out there. It's called, How Not to Pay for Services, that Kim does, that talks about how you can get Meals on Wheels and other things that are out there that people don't even realize are available for, you know, little money or no money. And it's a great opportunity, like Dave says, if you're not available at 2 in the afternoon to watch these. They've all been recorded. They're on our website. And I always joke and say, you can watch them at your leisure, kind of like Netflix, right? Get a snack, get a drink, plug them in, watch them, fast forward. You know, you don't have to watch them all at one time. And it's an excellent way to share them with friends and family, because just because your kid lives out in California doesn't mean that they can't download this and watch it out in California.
Exactly. And, you know, our documents use certain words that in normal life, have a certain meaning. So I'm talking about the word irrevocable, right? The word revocable. And it, normally, if I gave you $10 irrevocably, you'd think you had $10 and I'm not going to get that back from you at all. But legally, it doesn't exactly mean that. And, you know, especially when clients meet with us and we spend it, you spend an hour with them, Debbie, you're explaining their different options. You're explaining to them how this trust works or how this will is going to work. And then they say, what is it? Well, okay, we're going to think about it. We'll talk to each other. We're going to talk to our kids too. And, you know, I say to them, listen, if I could be available for that conversation, I would love to be. No charge, nothing, because I know inevitably there'll be something like, wait, you're going to do an irrevocable thing? No, don't do irrevocable, because then you can't undo it. You can't change it. right? You can't control it. But that's, in fact, not what it means in our world, in the legal world. And the webinars help reinforce the truth of what these documents and the words in the documents mean. So at least you make an informed decision. And when you have family members, like, you know, son living in Phoenix, he's making an informed decision or giving you informed advice, rather, I guess is the right way to say it. So they end up being a huge, huge asset for us in helping us explain things. And you could pause it and you could rewind. Wait, let me hear that again. You know, so a lot of times we have clients who they just nod like, oh, yeah, and no, I get it, but they didn't get it. So mm-hmm. the webinars really, really help. I did want to mention one client, if I may, that I met with again 2 days ago, and they actually retained us about 3 weeks ago. And so the situation is as follows. Husband has Parkinson's. Wife does not have Parkinson's. It's a second relationship. They do anticipate he's going to age in place and that sometime, maybe next year, he's going to need some services. And what did they engage us in now, Debbie? It was to create a trust to get those look-back periods started, but also to sometime in the fall, we don't know yet when we're going to do it, sometime in the fall, we're going to likely apply for community Medicaid for him. And he could have some hours of help, but he doesn't really need it. I wouldn't use the word need, neither would he. But he's anticipating that there will be a need in the not-too-distant future. So why are we doing this now? Why did he engage us now? And it's because come January 1st, they're supposed to be instituting a 2.5-year look-back period on these home care applications. So I applaud him and his wife because they're making a very proactive step of applying, you know, they're going to apply for this program when there's no look-back period, which is before January 1st. And, you know, it's not an instantaneous thing. It's not like someone's going to be knocking on the door to provide care that next day. So they're planning for spring. They're planning for late winter, mid-spring, early spring of next year, and what the needs may be. And because of these rule changes, Debbie, they're getting ahead of it. They're getting, you know, they're kind of all queued up so in the fall we can press go. We're already gathering documents for their home care application. And, you know, it's a good time to just remind people, rules do change, and there's one, it's not maybe. It's already on the books. It should have happened, you know, a year ago, and it didn't because of COVID. January 1st, home care rules are going to change. It's going to be harder to qualify financially. And so if you're out there, you do have dementia in the family, a diagnosis, in fact, Parkinson's diagnosis, you're still okay. We got to look forward. We got to look a year and say, what are you going to be like then? And if you're going to need services then, we may want to jump the gun and get you qualified before the rules change. Just wanted to get that in.
Yeah, I mean, planning ahead is huge because if you don't, unfortunately, there's things we can do. If there's a crisis, we do crisis planning, but we'd much rather get everything planned up front, have a smooth transition, and not have to rush around and do things at the last minute.
Speaking of last minute, I know we don't have a ton of time here. I did, you know, for the first time since COVID, I went to St. Peter's Hospital for the first time on Wednesday, Debbie, and, you know, still on lockdown, temperature checks, ID checks. You know, why are you here? A limitation on visitors. You can only have one visitor if you're a patient there. They made an exception for me and for one of our employees who is going to be a witness because it's rather an emergency. We had to run there, right? I was called on Tuesday. We showed up there on Wednesday. Will, power of attorney, healthcare proxy for a gentleman who's not doing so well. Again, it's bad enough that the reality of health and deteriorating health and things like that, it's an unforced error to have to run around last second to put documents in place. It was to protect his wife, right, to give her some options, mm-hmm. to be able to pay some bills, retitle some things while he's still here, but he's obviously in a hospital bed, so he won't be able to transact by himself. Basic documents are so incredibly important, and I know we talk about it all the time, and it's kind of, you know, a broken record, but, like, we ran to the hospital so that his wife now like she's not dealing with enough things, Debbie, right? She now has to run around to retitle assets, to avoid probate, to make sure that, you know, they have kids, but the plan is not for the kids to get money. It's for her to get money. So we needed to get a will signed to leave everything to spouse. A lot going on. Having these basic documents in place will not make your life better, but it will make it easier when life is not going very well.
It's great that you will be able to do that. And we're also able to do Zoom doc signings. I did one at Daughters of Sarah. They were wonderful there. They set everything up with the Zoom so that we could do the signing of the documents via Zoom, because they have restrictions too, a lot of the nursing homes do, as to who they'll let in, because, you know, COVID is still here, right? You need to be really, really careful out there, and they set everything up and we signed the documents via Zoom. So that's also out there if there's something that needs to be done.
That's great. We've done so many of those. I hope that will one of the things I hope that sticks after COVID is some ability for video signings or video notaries. It's really made our job easier in some respects. I still like being in the room. I think you do too. But
I do.
At least it's better than nothing, right?
Right. And if we can't get in to sign the documents, then this is the next best thing, because a lot of times people can't get out of their homes or they can't get out of where they are to get documents signed.
Ben, you there?
I'm right here.
What are you doing for Father's Day, Mr. Father?
We are going to the Hideaway in Saratoga, Saratoga Lake, to have brunch and then hopefully get in a game of miniature golf and then go to Saratoga to a... they have a... oh, goodness gracious. Farmer's market going on by the park. So we're going to go there as well. How about you?
We're going to go see my parents up at Lake George and have a little barbecue. Yes. I don't mean to pry, but maybe next time you'll tell me where you mini golf. I'm terribly interested.
Right outside the Wilton Mall. There's a place right there.
Definitely.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great course.
You guys have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.